Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12, Creation of the Kamas and Others, Text 39. Itihasa
Puranani
Panchamam
Vedam
Ishvara
Sarvebhya
Eva
Vaktrebhya
Sasrije
Sarva
Darshana.
Itihasa Puranani
Panchamam Vedam Ishvara
Sarvebhya
Eva Vaktrebhya
Sasrije
Sarva Darshana.
Itihasa Puranani
Panchamam Vedam Ishvara
Sarvebhya
Eva Vaktrebhya
Sasrije Sarva Darshana.
Itihasa Puranani
Panchamam Vedam Ishvara
Sarvebhya Eva Vaktrebhya
Sasrije
Sarva Darshana.
Histories.
Puranani. The Puranas.
Supplementary Vedas.
Panchamam.
The fifth.
Vedam.
The Vedic literature.
Ishvara.
The Lord.
Sarvebhya.
Altogether.
Eva.
Certainly.
Vaktrebhya.
From his mouth.
Sasrije.
Created.
Sarva,
all around.
Darshana,
one who can see all time.
Translation. Then he created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories, from all his mouths, since he could see all the past, present, and future. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are histories of particular countries and nations, and of the world. But the Puranas are the histories of the universe, not only in one millennium, but in many kalpas. Brahma has knowledge of those historical facts, and therefore all the Puranas are histories. As originally composed by Brahma, they are part of the Vedas, and are called the fifth Veda. Translation. Then he created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories, from all his mouths, since he could see all the past, present, and future. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanchakalpaturubhyas Chakripasindubhyayavacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Lord Brahma is manifesting the Vedas, and this manifestation of the Vedas includes the Puranas and the history. Itihasa Puranani. So, therefore we understand, on the basis of evidence such as this verse, and there are a number of other verses in Srimad Bhagavatam making the same point, So we understand that the Puranas and the histories, they are part of the Vedas. They are as Vedic as the four Vedas. In other words, as authentic, as scriptural evidences and sources of scriptural knowledge. They're as authentic, as bona fide, as the four Vedas themselves. Therefore they're called the fifth Veda. Itihasa, or histories, means Mahabharata and Ramayana, particularly. Then there are also various other supplementary literatures, supplementary to the four Vedas at least. So those, they're also considered to be part of the fifth Veda, on the basis of such authentic statements as the statement here in Srimad Bhagavatam. However, it is a fact that some people, even quite a number of people, at least in India, they feel that the Puranas and the histories are not authentic like the Vedas. They're not eternal. But they're histories. They've been written when the different events have taken place. Then those different histories were compiled and put together. And now they're existing and they're called Itihasa or Purana. But the four Vedas, they have been existing since time immemorial, since actually the beginning of creation. So therefore these people feel that they cannot be accepted as authentic, eternal Vedic literatures emanating directly from the Supreme Lord and which should be taken as being completely authoritative. They don't think like that. So, this is one of the great controversies surrounding the Vedic literatures, and it has been for a long time. Srila Jiva Goswami and Tatvasandarbha, in which, at the beginning of which at least, he is establishing what we can accept as authority and what we can't accept as authority. He discusses many things and particularly focuses on the Vedic literature as being the most authoritative source of knowledge. But then he starts discussing this question, this particular question which we have referred to right now. So that was 500 years ago, 450 years ago, something of that sort. So even at that time, there was some controversy like this. And to this very day, that controversy is still going on. And some people, like the Arya Samaj particularly, they don't accept anything other than the four Vedas. And even when we talk about the four Vedas, they accept only the Samhitas, that particular part of the four Vedas. That is a very interesting subject. Very interesting subject. A little technical. As we mentioned yesterday, the four Vedas are divided into subdivisions. The main subdivision is the Samhitas. Then those Samhitas are explaining all about, generally about the demigods and what they do and what is available from them. Then the Brahmanas, Agamas, Akhyayanas, these are the four main divisions. They're explaining how you worship the demigods, different processes, like that. So they're also part of the four Vedas. And then there are philosophical writings drawn from certain statements made in the Vedas, and they're called the Upanishads. So we have the four Vedas then, comprising the Samhitas, Brahmanas, Agamas and Akhyayanas, then the Upanishads, philosophical analyses of the four Vedas. So this, as we discussed yesterday, this is known as Shruti. Shruti. Then there is this fifth Veda, the Puranas, Itihasas, Vedanta Sutra, tantras, pancharatras, and other literatures like this. And on the surface it appears that these are somewhat different from the four Vedas. For one thing, the Sanskrit used in the four Vedas is different from the Sanskrit used in the other section, the Smriti section, Puranas and Itihasas. The Sanskrit used in the four Vedas is older and more technical, whereas the Sanskrit used in the Puranas and Itihasas, fifth Veda, this is less complicated. It's called classical Sanskrit, technically, as opposed to Vedic Sanskrit. So these are two forms of Sanskrit which differ to some extent from each other. And the Puranic Sanskrit is simpler. So these people feel that this is another evidence for placing this fifth Veda, Purana and Itihasa, in a different category as not being eternal like the four Vedas. But then we come across statements like this, that Lord Brahma, right at the very beginning of creation, he spoke the four Vedas with their immediate supplements like Ayurveda, Dhanurveda, Gandharva Veda, Samstapatya Veda, and many other Vedas dealing with different technical features of different material sciences and arts. But then it also states that he spoke the histories, the Puranas and Itihasas, at that time, right at the beginning of creation. So therefore, confusion is there. Confusion is there. The people who feel that the Puranas and Itihasas are not eternal, like the four Vedas, and not manifesting from Lord Narayan, which the four Vedas do, who the four Vedas do emanate from, they take the point that Mahabharata, for example, Mahabharata is the history of the Pandavas and the appearance of Lord Krishna. Detailed history. And those particular events, they only took place 5,000 years ago. The universe had been existing for a long time before that. Long, many millions of years before Lord Krishna appeared. And Mahabharata was not really known in those days. And similarly Ramayana, even though it's older than Mahabharata, but they take it that Lord Rama appeared some thousands of years ago, maybe millions of years, but still the universe had been existing for a long time before Lord Rama appeared, and the Vedas had been existing. So they look at it like this, but they don't understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is appearing time and time again. It's not that Lord Krishna appeared for the first time 5,000 years ago. And therefore, seeing it was his first appearance, the record of his activities while he was on the planet, that was the first time that record was ever made. No. Even in Bhagavad Gita itself, Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna that I appeared previously in the same day of Brahma, in the same creation, I appeared and I presented Bhagavad Gita at that time also. Ah, imam vivasvate yogam, proktavan aham aviyam, vivasvan manave praha, manurikshvakave pravit. Lord Krishna explains that I presented the same knowledge, Bhagavad Gita, which is part of Mahabharata. Therefore it falls in the context of the same itihasas, histories which are being referred to here. I explained it previously to the sun god Vivasvan. Vivasvan explained it to Manu, the father of mankind, the presiding deity of the human species, from whom the human species has descended. So Vivasvan spoke it to him, and then Manu spoke it to Ijvaku. So Srila Prabhupada makes a comment, a calculation there. This is in the purport of the first verse in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That Lord Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to the sun god, and then the sun god spoke it to Manu. So Prabhupada is assuming that at the time Lord Krishna spoke the knowledge to the sun god, then Manu was not present, or at least the Lord felt that it was not suitable to speak that knowledge to Manu. In other words, that Manu was very young, or perhaps had not been born, and then he came in the next generation, and then the sun god spoke the knowledge to him. Something like that. So Srila Prabhupada makes a calculation based on the age of the current Manu at this time, as we understand it from Vedic literature, that Lord Krishna appears in the 28th cycle of the four yugas in the lifetime of this Manu. This is the seventh Manu in this day of Brahma, or Krishna appears in this universe in the lifetime of the seventh Manu. So 28 cycles of the four yugas into the lifetime of the seventh Manu. So one cycle of the four yugas means 4,320,000 years. So 28 cycles means 4,320,000 times 28. I don't know if we have any mathematics experts here who would like to do a quick calculation, but it comes to something like 120 million years, approximately. Something like that. So Srila Prabhupada makes a calculation on these different bases, and then he says that it would appear then that Lord Krishna is saying that I spoke the same knowledge to Vivasvan, and it must have been about 120 million years ago. Same knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So, this means that Bhagavad Gita, specifically in this case, Bhagavad Gita did not first appear on this planet when Lord Krishna spoke it in the context of Mahabharata, in his appearance 5,000 years ago. Actually, the intention of the Lord is that Bhagavad Gita be available all the time. But unfortunately, even though sometimes it is available, which is very fortunate for the conditioned souls, but sometimes it becomes lost. And then after a while it's sort of resurrected or given again, manifested again in human society. But then it may also become unmanifest again. So this is happening, actually, with the Vedic literatures in their different parts, that one part is existing in one form, then the form is changed somewhat, somehow, in the course of time. Some part may then be lost, but then later on re-established, because this is the material world. And as we know, life is difficult in the material world. In the material world, things are prone to deteriorate. Things are prone to destruction. So even this Vedic knowledge, which is the most sacred thing within the material world, even this sometimes is prone to become affected by the passage of time, or in the passage of time. Particularly when we consider that this is very sanctified knowledge. I shouldn't have touched it. Even though this is very sanctified knowledge, actually because it's sanctified knowledge, therefore it's liable to come under attack. Krishna, Krishna. Because it's such sanctified knowledge, it's liable to come under attack, because this is the material world. And material world means people generally, or in many cases, they won't want to know about this because it will challenge their existence, challenge their fundamental platform of existence, which is of gross sense gratification, exploiting the material nature without reference to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If scriptural knowledge is always present and is very prominent in society, then their position or their opportunity to exploit material nature will become inhibited to some extent. So that, therefore, there are many people, they are very happy if scriptural knowledge can be discounted, eliminated, contaminated, changed, something like that. And this has happened with the Vedas. It's also happened with the Bible. And this is very common. Very, very common. It's far more likely to find contaminated spiritual knowledge than it is to find pure spiritual knowledge. Far more likely. So, in the course of time, Lord Krishna says, Evam parampara praptam imam rajashayo vidu sakalineha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. That I spoke the knowledge back in those days to Vivasvan, then it was handed down in the chain of disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam. And imam rajashayo vidu, the saintly kings, they were the main ones who were protecting that knowledge and preserving it. So it was coming down in this line of saintly kings. But then, in the course of time, yoga nashta. The science of yoga was lost. It was destroyed. Therefore Krishna says, sa evayam maya tedya, yoga prokta paratana, bhaktosi me sakacheti, rahasyam hyetad utamam. Therefore, because that happened, I'm now presenting that same knowledge again to you, Arjuna, to once again re-establish the system of disciplic succession. Bhaktosi me sakacheti, because you're my devotee and my friend, therefore I've chosen you to present the same knowledge to again. So, here Lord Krishna is making it very clear that Bhagavad Gita, at least, was not simply manufactured by him 5,000 years ago on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. It had previously been existing in human society, and it was well known. But then, because of the influence of the material world, somehow it became lost, contaminated, like that. So the same thing applies. Same thing applies with these other literatures. Purana, Itihasa, the Mahabharata itself, Ramayana. These are all eternal literatures. And by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he wants them to be available. Generally they are available. But somehow due to the onslaught of material nature, from time to time, they become lost or partially lost or contaminated like that. In the Mahabharata itself, Mahabharata, of course, is known as the longest poem in the world. 110,000 verses and all rhyming poetry with very nice meters like that. So it's the longest poem in the world. 110,000 verses. But in Mahabharata, Srila Vyasadeva explains that I'm presenting Mahabharata now in about 100,000 verses. But this same literature is existing in other planets in more complete forms. He says, on the planets of the Yakshas, it exists in 1,000,000 verses. Here it's 100,000 or so. So on the planets of the Yakshas, 1,000,000 verses. On Pitriloka, the planets of the forefathers, it's existing in 1,500,000 verses. On the planets of some of the demigods, is existing in 3 million verses. And on the planet of Lord Brahma, it exists in 6 million verses. The same literature. And then as he's making this explanation, he says that I'm also, even though I'm going to present it in 100,000 verses, as part of the presentation, I'm going to also present a condensed version of it right now, which will be just a few thousand verses, an abbreviated form, right here in the context of Mahabharata, in the form of about 100,000 verses. So, this is actually the situation. The Vedic literatures are existing on all the planets, particularly the higher planets, and in more complete forms on those planets. Actually, we understand that when Lord Brahma manifested all these Vedas, as is being explained now, he manifested them as one literature. And that literature was known as the Veda, or Atharva Veda. Atharva Veda. But then as time went on, as people degraded, people became less and less capable of dealing with such a vast literature, presenting so many subjects, complex subjects, and all interwoven together. So people became less and less capable of extracting whatever important subjects they were interested in, and they were becoming more and more confused. So then the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested as Śrīla Vyāsadeva. And then Śrīla Vyāsadeva, he divided the Vedas and categorized the Vedas. Divided them up under different headings. So if you're interested in some particular subject, you'll find everything about it in one place. Therefore, Vyāsadeva is called Vyas. Vyas means the divider. Veda Vyas, the divider of the Veda. So Vyas, he divided that one Veda, or Atharva Veda, into the four Vedas. Then he extracted all the historical narrations, which were interwoven here and there. And he placed them separately in the section which he himself refers to as the fifth Veda, Itihasa and Purana, and the Pancharatras. And he compiled then, he made some commentaries on them himself. He presented them in his own way as he felt was most appropriate. So on the surface it appears that he may have actually written them. They may not have been existing, but he wrote them. But no, it's not like that. Just like we mentioned, the Purana, the Mahabharata. Here we have 100,000 verses, so vast. It's the longest poem on the planet. But in the planet, on the planet of Lord Brahma, 6 million verses. So just imagine if that version was available here. It would be bewildering. Already to read 100,000 verses generally takes a few years. To read 6 million, perhaps no one could do it in one lifetime. It's very likely. So it's presented in a form which is accessible for the people of this planet. Or like the Puranas. We speak of 18 Puranas, but actually, strictly speaking, it's known as Purana, one Purana, with 18 subdivisions. The 18 Puranas that we have, they're 400,000 verses. 400,000. Srimad Bhagavatam is 18,000. Just see how long it takes to read Srimad Bhagavatam. So, on the planet of Lord Brahma, the Purana exists in a form of 1 billion verses. 1 billion verses. So even the 6 million verses of Mahabharata is insignificant compared to that. So that is like, sort of like the original Purana, you could say, or the Purana in its most fundamental form, 1 billion verses. 100 lakhs. Or 1,000 lakhs. 1,000 lakhs. So, anyway, something like that. 1 billion verses. Of detailed historical knowledge of what has happened in the universe, how it's happened, and particularly the appearances of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All different types of materialistic activities for material elevation, to higher material planets, better birth in the next lifetime, more sense gratification, perhaps becoming a demigod within this material world. So this is Karmakandya. And that is what the four Vedas are focusing on, essentially. And then the Upanishads, philosophical analysis of certain points made in the four Vedas, they are somewhat impersonal. Essentially just making a distinction between material life, matter, and spirit, that which is spiritual. But then in the Puranas we find descriptions of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Puranas and in Itihasas, Ramayana and Mahabharata. We find these accounts. And along with the accounts of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we find that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is giving specific instruction for the elevation of human society from the material platform to the topmost spiritual platform, the platform of going back to Godhead, developing pure love for Krishna, and returning to the spiritual realm, not just going to some higher level within the material world. So this is explained very explicitly in the Puranas. Therefore the Puranas are more important. Not only are they authentic, but they're more important even than the four Vedas. In fact, there are a number of statements in the Puranas and Mahabharata like this. One very strong statement is that even if someone knows all the four Vedas perfectly, but they disrespect the Puranas, in their next life, they become a dog. So, Puranas are very important. Very important. And of the Puranas, the topmost, the final Purana, the last of the Puranas, is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, presented by Srila Vyasadeva, compiled, extracted, as he felt suitable to be the final, concluding part of all the Vedic literatures. There's a very interesting description in Srimad Bhagavatam itself in the 4th and 5th chapters, and even going on, mainly in the 4th and 5th chapters though, of the first canto, that Srila Vyasadeva, he compiled all the Vedic literature. When we say compiled, that means it was mainly from internal sources, realization from internal sources, because as Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge had been lost, all Vedic knowledge had been lost. Therefore Vyasa had to come and present Vedic knowledge again, and presented in a certain format. So it was mainly on the basis of internal realization that Vyas compiled all the Vedic knowledge. And he'd completed what he thought was all Vedic knowledge, including his own final personal commentary, Vedanta Sutra, but then he was feeling dissatisfied. And he was wondering, why am I feeling dissatisfied if I have come to Vedanta? Veda means the Vedas, and Anta means the end. If I've come to the end of the Vedas, why am I feeling dissatisfied? If I've come to the end of the Vedas, actually, I should be feeling completely satisfied that I've actually fulfilled the objective of human life perfectly and come to the platform of the highest perfection available to a human being. But still he was feeling dissatisfied. And he was wondering, How could it be? So then Narada Muni came on the scene, and Narada Muni explained to him that you have neglected to really draw out very nicely and very clearly the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though you've described him in the Puranas, but still, you haven't made it so crystal clear that the actual goal of life is simply to become a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. So you must do that. Describe his incarnations, describe his activities, describe his qualities, his pastimes, and explain the philosophy of who is Krishna very clearly. So then, Narada Muni, Srila Vyasadeva was thinking, yes, okay, I should do that, but how am I going to do it? So Narada Muni then explained that you meditate again. Previously that knowledge had been revealed to him, mainly in meditation. So he said, you meditate again, and he gave him further instructions how to deepen his meditation. So Vyas meditated again, and then he realized directly Krishna. Directly. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate male apasyat purusham purnam mayam chatad apashrayam. That when he was bhakti yogena manasi, his mind was absorbed in the trance of bhakti yoga, then apasyat purusham purnam, he saw directly the complete Supreme Person. Not just a partial form, not along with other forms, but that form, the Purusham Purnam, the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, he wasn't on his own, but he wasn't there with his expansion so much. He was there with his energies. And it was very clear that he is the Supreme, complete Person. And Mayam Chatad Apashrayam, Maya Devi was standing in the back, ashamed to come in front of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vyas then realized Krishna directly, and then he presented Srimad Bhagavatam. He was presenting Srimad Bhagavatam, but he was thinking, who am I going to present it to? Then he thought, I'll present it to my son, Shukadev Goswami. At the time, Shukadev was in the womb of his mother. Shukadev Goswami was a Brahman realized soul. He was within the womb of his mother. And at one point, just before he would have normally come out, after that period of several months, he thought to himself, do I really want to come out and be exposed to the whole external material world? And he thought to himself, I don't want to take that risk. Whether I'm in my mother's womb or outside, there's nothing wrong with me being in my mother's womb, because he's Brahman realized, so even though it's generally an uncomfortable situation, but he doesn't feel it to be uncomfortable, because he's transcendental to his body. But he was thinking, I won't be exposed to the dangers of material life if I just stay in my mother's womb. So he stayed there for 12 years. We don't know what his mother thought of that, how she found it. Perhaps it was a little uncomfortable, because he grew. He didn't just stay like a little infant. He grew to the size of a normal 12-year-old within the womb of his mother. Finally, his mother was feeling uncomfortable, and Vyas wanted to teach him Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vyas requested him, my dear son, won't you come out? And Shukadev said, well, no, I don't want to. I think I'll just stay here because I'm not feeling uncomfortable and I'm a lot safer here. I'm not going to be exposed to the danger of fall down, really. And Vyasa said, you can come out, you don't need to worry. You won't fall down, you're a fully realized soul. And Shukadeva said, well, how do I know I won't fall down? Vyasa said, I promise you won't fall down. Shukadeva said to him, but how can I believe you? You're a householder. You're just saying this because your wife is complaining to you. So I don't believe you. So Vyasa, he wouldn't come out. He wouldn't accept what Vyasa said. So Vyasa was puzzled and a little disturbed. So then he thought, maybe I can get Lord Krishna to come and he'll promise. And then maybe my son will accept his promise. So Sukadeva agreed, all right, if you get Lord Krishna to come, and if he gives his promise that I won't fall down, then I'll come out. So Lord Krishna came, gave his promise, Sukadeva came out. Vyasa thought, oh, very nice, now I can instruct him in Srimad Bhagavatam. But Sukadeva immediately ran and was gone. Completely naked. He'd just come out of his mother's womb. He just went. So, Vyasa again was very disturbed and distressed. How am I going to present Srimad Bhagavatam? His son was just running naked like an avaduta, completely unconcerned with his surroundings and material existence generally. So, Vyasadeva thought, I'll send out a team of my disciples to find him, wherever he is, and to bring him back. But then he thought, how am I going to get him to come back? He doesn't want to come back. And I don't want to use violence. So then he told his disciples that you simply wander around India and recite, he gave them a number of verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, which are glorifying Krishna. One of them is that verse I've referred to it on a number of occasions. Aho bakiyam stana kala kutam. Jigram Shaya Payad Apyasav Sadvi, of how merciful Krishna is, that he gave the position of nurse to Putana. So, these disciples simply wandered around, just chanting these verses. And Vyasa told them that after some time, you may notice that one rather wild-looking, naked young man will be following you while you're reciting these verses. So when you find this has happened, then you know this is my son. So then you return here and just keep chanting those verses. And he'll be attracted by those verses, so attracted, he'll come back here and then I can instruct him in Srimad Bhagavatam. So they did that. Shukadeva came back, Vyasa explained Srimad Bhagavatam to him, and then he explained it to Maharaj Parikshit. It was heard by Suta Goswami. He went to Naimisharanya, repeated the same thing to the sages of Naimisharanya. Vyasa was there again, and he wrote it down at that point. So in this way we've received Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's one verse there. Atmaramas chumunayo negranta apyurukrame kuravanti ahaita kim bhaktim itam bhutugunahari. That Shukadeva, he was already spiritually realized. He was already impersonally realized, Brahman realized. But when he heard the recitation of those verses about Krishna, he was attracted. So attracted that he felt that he had to follow those disciples who were reciting the verses. And he followed them all the way back to the ashram of Vyasa. So in this way it establishes that Krishna is the highest principle of spiritual life, higher than Brahman, higher than the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Because even someone like Shukadeva, who's firmly fixed on the spiritual platform, beyond any question of being attracted to anything material, he became attracted to Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam then is described as being the topmost of all Vedic literatures, even the topmost of all the Puranas. Puranam Amalam, the spotless Purana. Spotless Purana, realized by Vyas when he was on the highest level of consciousness, higher than the level of consciousness he had been on when he presented the other Vedas and even the other Puranas and Mahabharat and Ramayana. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam, the fifth Veda, actually the most essential of all Vedic literature, can deliver to us directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one can go back to Godhead simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Any comments or questions?
The Vedas were written down 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
But where do Western scholars get their concept of the Aryans having come to India from England, and
it's called mental speculation. To start off with, they just can't believe that, you know, these things could have been existing before. They just can't believe. There's no written record beyond 5,000 years, because there was no need in those days. They didn't use writing, because people could remember things. But then as people's memories became shorter, things had to be written down. So then you start getting a written record. So actually that indicates degeneration, not progressive evolution as they think. So therefore they just can't believe that these things could have existed as it said they do or did. So therefore they have to figure out some other alternative. From their fertile brains, they churn their brains and out come these ideas. 2,000 years old. Or, you know, like this or like that. Yeah. It's one of the difficulties of relying on direct sensual perception. Your senses are extremely limited. And when you start having to deal with things which are beyond the perception of your senses, then, well, you can't really deal with them definitively. You can only speculate. And when you start speculating, then you make mistakes, you may cheat, and, you know, all sorts of other difficulties. So the whole thing becomes simply compounded. The whole problem becomes compounded. Therefore, our standard for accepting knowledge is not, first of all, our direct sensual perception, but first of all, the statements of the Vedas. That if our direct sensual perception contradicts the statement of the Vedas, then what do we reject? Our direct sensual perception, not the statement of the Vedas. Prabhupada gives two examples. One is that there's a Vedic statement that stool is always contaminated. Now, by our direct sensual perception, we also perceive that. But then there's also a Vedic statement that the stool of a cow or a bull is not contaminated. But on the surface of it, you look at it and you think, oh, it's just stool like any other stool. So that's our direct sensual perception. It smells in a certain way and looks in a certain way. So we immediately assume it's contaminated like all the rest of other types of stool. But actually it's not. It's completely pure. Yeah. And bone. Bone, according to the Vedas, generally is contaminated, and according to direct sensual perception, the same. It's contaminated. But conch, that particular bone is not contaminated, it's pure. That's the Vedic statement. So when cow dung is even tested scientifically, it's found to be pure. And the same with conch, it's also found to be pure. But according to just like regular direct sensual perception, you'd think, oh, immediately you'd think it's contaminated. So therefore we accept Vedic statement before our direct sensual perception. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Maharaj,
what was Sugata Goswami's understanding of Krishna? Why was in the womb? Why did Yami accept that Krishna was the Lord? Because he did not realize that Krishna was the Lord.
No, well, he had some idea. He was Brahman realized. He was a Brahmavadi. So his conception of Lord Krishna would have been something like, he's Brahman realized, he's a liberated soul, something like that. He's a very high living being, a great transcendental living being. Of course, he wasn't a devotee as such at that time, although he was sort of in between, a little in between, because Srila Vyasadeva had been reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to his wife. So Sugadev within the womb had been hearing and getting some taste for it. But still, at that point he's counted as Brahmavadi until he comes and really becomes attracted and then takes up the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he goes through a transitional process. Just at about around that point, but the real transition starts when he comes back. The main transition. When he's trained by his father specifically on his return. This is the thing about Brahmavadis as opposed to Mayavadis. Brahmavadis respect the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not in the same way as the devotees do, but still they definitely have respect. Yeah, whereas the Mayavadis don't. So he had some respect for Krishna in some terms. Not exactly devotee terms, but something a little positive. Any other comments or questions?
According to what you were saying about the link to Bhagavatam or the virtues of different planets. It seems that it's more advantageous to study the Vedic literature on this planet.
Yeah.
It seems like we have the bridge version.
It is.
So we can actually get the essence of all the Vedas without having to take so long.
Right. That's true. Yeah, without having to take so long, face so many distractions. And, you know, all it's like the very essence. It's not that because what we have is shorter in length, that some of it has been lost. I mean, some of like the essence has been lost. But he cut out things which were less important and presented just the main things. Yeah. So, you know, it's a very advantageous position, it's a fact, to study Srimad Bhagavatam here rather than on the planets of the demigods. Oh yes, if they follow them nicely, of course.
So is there a possibility for them to go back from Chigarit from them?
Yeah. The associates of Lord Brahma generally do. The inhabitants of Brahmaloka generally do. At least if Lord Brahma is a devotee, which he may or may not be, but when he is, when the Lord Brahma is a devotee, then his followers, meaning the inhabitants of Brahmaloka, when he goes back to Godhead, they generally go with him. And, yeah, otherwise the demigods, there's so many levels of demigods, but they're generally devotees. And in some cases they make advancement. But actually it's easier to make advancement on this level because one is not confronted with so much material attraction or distractions, very opulent ways, standards of living and like that, people can easily get sidetracked. So here this is a middle planet. You're not really too far up and you're not too far down. So it's a good position for studying the Vedas and practicing, following the Vedas. A very advantageous position. So Prabhupada would say that the demigods want to be born. In fact, the Bhagavatam says that the demigods want to be born on earth in Kali Yuga because God realization is so easily available. It's really quite extraordinary how easily available it is. Any other comments or questions, Matajis? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.